A lot of people are sharing their stories with us today here at WGN Radio. I guess that doesn't make it an unusual day for us, but it is just kind of interesting to sort of hear and listen to people's different thoughts, experiences, and stories about the state going to phase three and businesses getting a chance to do what they do on a limited fashion, right? If you're getting your hair done, you all have to have masks on. You're not supposed to wait in the store. You're supposed to make your reservations online or on the phone. But the state is gradually sort of dipping its toe back into the water. John, my daughter, opening her hair salon, but still has not got unemployment. Thousands are still waiting. They only have 100 people that are allowed to manually verify the identity of people applying, even though all the documents have been sent in. Ugh. I don't know about that number, 100, but something, there is a bottleneck at IDES. And for those of you who have not got your unemployment compensation benefits, Terry Savage, who regularly visits with us on this show, says be patient. That's, you just throw up your hands and you hope, you believe that that money will come in. Somebody asked if it will eventually be retroactive, and we were told that it would. That question particularly was will my employer make it up? And no, the state is supposed to, and hopefully those checks will come, and hopefully they will be in the amount that you have been due. This is kind of a funny text. It says, John, until 3 years ago, that $600 I got in the mail was more than my weekly salary. This is a great deal for many. Do you have any idea why the government has added $600? I'm surprised if this question is for real, but I guess the answer is they want you to spend that money. They think you need it, and not only do you need it, but the places where you will spend that money need it, so spend that money. But a lot of people can't spend money on swimming pools. One topic that came up today, and maybe you've noticed this too, is that those little kiddie pools that you'd like to dip your toe in the backyard, maybe the kids are going to splash around in there, are very hard to come by. And a listener texted in and said, I work for UPS, and every night there's a ton of swimming pools in boxes in our building for delivery now. And somebody else just said, John, I'm a water safety expert, and I think Lou Manfredini, who was on your show, is right about people who are hoarding swimming pools, buying them up, and then reselling them. Can you believe it? There's a black market for kiddie pools. Remember this, drowning is the leading cause of accidental death for children ages 1 to 4. Second leading cause of accidental death for children 1 to 14. Water safety is not common sense. If you're going to all of a sudden throw everybody in the pool now, let's all be careful and smart about this. And one other note, John, I work for a beer distributor. Modelo beer is going to be hard to get in July. Folks are going to be coming out. Let's talk a little bit about the markets and what those are doing, too. That's retail. Brian Battle joins us again on WGN Radio on the Wintrust Business Lunch. He's the director of trading at Performance Trust Capital Partners. Let's get this conversation started here anyway, Brian, and then we'll pick it up on the other side. How are you today?
I'm great, John. Thanks for having me on this afternoon.
In general, how was the market this week? How is it today?
So we've had it's a holiday shortened week, so a lot of activity got compressed in a couple of days here, but we're softer, I'd say, but we always have to be careful when we say that. You know, we're down 200 points today on a Dow Jones at a 25,000 points, so fractionally lower, and I think that just might be because we're end of the week here, and there's a lot of news out this week, so everybody's going to be a little bit cautious.
You know, I was talking to Terry Savage about where the market is and where it's been. We were at 29. We went to 18. We're back at 25. I don't know if that's the glass is half full or empty to you. How do you react to that sort of trip we've taken so far?
Yeah, I think the trip we've taken is 100% appropriate. You know, the stock market is supposed to do two things. One, it's supposed to reflect the economy. The stock market is the value of businesses. Can they generate profit, and can they defend that profit as a durable earnings? So that's what the stock market is supposed to be. And the stock market also thinks about the future. What are those future earnings going to be? What are they worth today? And so the stock market was very high because things looked like they were great in January, February. The world fell apart, and so did the stock market. And when we willfully, remember, what's causing the U.S. economy to get hurt right now isn't the virus. It's the public policy response of quarantine. So as that quarantine becomes experimentally unwound, the smart stock market is reacting, saying, hey, we're going to get back to normal. So the stock market is way ahead of where the economy is right now, but I don't think that's inappropriate.
Are you suggesting that the shutdowns have been inappropriate?
No, what I'm saying is the shutdowns caused the stock market to sell off.
Sure.
Because when we started all this in March, you know, the end of March, the beginning of April, we had no idea how long it was going to last. We had no idea how dangerous this virus was. So here we are 60 days later, and it looks like we understand way better that this is a virus that is highly contagious but affects different populations differently and affects different geographies differently. So we're starting to unlock the U.S. economy. There's only, I think, 11 states, maybe 10 after today. Illinois is probably going to be unlocked here to some degree that have lockdowns in place. So a lot of parts of the rural Illinois and rural America really weren't that affected. So not inappropriate policy, but now that we know more, the policy isn't as appropriate. So the U.S. economy is going to pick up speed. Therefore, the stock market is picking up speed, anticipating that we're going to start getting back to normal.
I hope I know the answer to your question. Answer it after a quick break here. But so is the market undervalued right now? It's 12:14. This is WGN. We'll continue with Brian Battle, Director, Performance Trust Capital Partners. You can visit performancetrust.com. Brian Battle's on a phone. Director, Performance Trust Capital Partners. You can visit performancetrust.com. You were talking a little bit about the market and why it is, where it is. Is it undervalued right now, Brian?
Well, John, that's a great point because there's two things there. Is it overvalued? So investing is always compared to what? So is it overvalued compared to where it has been? So year to date, and I'll just use the S&P because that's a broader measure of the market. Dow Jones is 30 stocks. S&P is 500. Year to date, the S&P is down 6.8%. But over the past year, so going back to May of 2019, the S&P is up about 8%. So we're up 8% from where we were a year ago. So overvalued or undervalued, I would say we're about where we were a year ago, a little higher. And the S&P 500 is 500 stocks, but there's subcomponents. So overvalued and undervalued is a broad measure. It might be more interesting to talk about it a little bit more specifically. So the real parts of the S&P 500 that have rallied has been information technology, like the FANG stocks, Facebook, Apple, Netflix, Microsoft, Google. Those stocks are doing great. The part of the S&P that hasn't done well is financials. The financial sector is about 10% of the S&P 500, and they're trading way below where they were a year ago. So it's a mixed bag. I think you have to be a little bit more specific about what categories are doing better and which are doing worse, but certainly the high tech, the leaders of the economy, the stocks you always think of are doing great, but that breadth of recovery isn't as wide and isn't spread across the whole market. So some parts of the economy are doing better, some parts are doing worse. And then into the future, I would say it's going to be pretty easy to think about which parts of the economy are going to have trouble if the U.S. economy takes a while to speed up. And that, of course, is hotels, tourism, mm-hmm. airlines, and cruise lines, let's say.
May to May, year to date, the S&P is up 8%?
That's right.
I'm shocked and pleased to hear that. We all focus too much on the Dow, but maybe we're also focusing on our 401ks. I wonder what the status of people,
yes.
Because if you're in a broad spectrum of stocks in a mutual fund in your 401k, and you should be, I wonder what the status of people's 401ks. I'll bet they're not all up 8% since last May.
That's right, John. So that's a great point, and one of the most important points that we should always have on a call like this is the most important takeaway from a call like this, if you're listening at home or you're in the car, is you have to know what you own. So if you're at home now, or if you're working from home, or you're quarantined, or you're furloughed here, look at your 401k and know what's in there. So I'd ask John Williams, John, what percentage of your 401k is exposure to Asia? And I'm not going to put you on the spot.
I have no idea.
You're probably going to say, I have no idea. Yeah, I'm not sure. So you should. So you should examine what your investing plan or your actual investing activity has been to understand where you're exposed. I dare say that as the U.S. and the global economy shut down, it was way harder on emerging market economies than it was on the U.S. because all those countries that provide raw material and raw fundamental labor are hurt way more than the U.S., which tends to be the end consumer for most of the world. It's been way harder on China than it has been on us over these past couple of months. So understanding what you own, to the main point here, is understanding what you own and what your exposures are vitally important. So if you just close your eyes, you bought the S&P 500 last year and you've been doing it every year, you're feeling pretty good where you are now. It certainly was dramatic this fall. I mean, this spring, a lot of things happened. But we have to remember, have a long-term time horizon. We're investors. We're not traders. And so we can't get, as you pointed out, you can't focus too much in the short term. Don't watch the headlines too much. Know what you own and make sure you have a plan and that you're executing on that plan.
Got another question about that before we ask that and answer that. I'm going to pop back into the newsroom. Steve Bertrand?
Now, we don't have word of charges, but WCCO, former station of yours and others, are reporting that former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin has been taken into custody today. He, of course, is the officer who had his knee against the neck of George Floyd for several minutes, leading to the death of Floyd. No announcement on charges, but one of the four fired police officers now reportedly taken into custody.
It's a question that's been coming up lately, Steve, because all four of them were fired. You said former because they were immediately fired, but they were also sent home. They were not in custody. One of them has now been charged, huh?
No, one of them has been taken into custody. There's been no word of charges yet.
Obviously, that would be the next step then, I guess. Huh?
Well, I mean, we're all judges in this case because we've seen the video, but typically you might arrest someone to interrogate them and find whether or not there's information to charge them. But
fair enough.
No charges yet.
Got it. Thank you for that, Steve Bertrand. It's 12:24. This is WGN. Just a couple more minutes then with Brian Battle. He's the director, Performance Trust Capital Partners, performancetrust.com. I don't know if there's something specific you want to get to, but I just want to follow that train of thought. You were talking about knowing what's in your portfolio, say, but nobody was going to guess a pandemic. And you said that maybe emerging markets, Asian markets, would get hit harder because not only did they get it first, but they got it hard. And it shut down a lot of manufacturing. I wonder, though, if that's an opportunity now, right? Or is that a good place for somebody to put money into, would you say now, Brian?
Yeah, that's a very interesting risk and reward trade-off that every individual investor has to measure. Yes, it could be a time to enter into emerging market economies, but that is a bet that the U.S. economy is going to, on the speed at which the U.S. economy will recover, and the speed at which global economic activity will persist. So if you're investing in emerging markets, you know, I pick an economy like Vietnam. If you're going to specifically invest into Vietnam, you're betting that there will be demand for Vietnamese labor for right. industries that they supply labor to. So that's a really specific and can be a high risk but a high return investment. But that's all a predicate. The whole investment thesis is based on, will the U.S. economy recover and how fast will it recover? So I think the first answer is yes, U.S. economy is going to recover. The question is how fast. And since we've never willfully turned off the U.S. economy like we just did, that's an experiment. Turning it back on again, that's also going to be an experiment. The thing I do know is it's way easier to turn off an economy than turn it on just because of the chain of custody and the just-in-time inventory and just as complicated as the global supply chain is. If you might want to open the car factory tomorrow, but you're going to have to wait a couple of weeks for parts to come in from overseas to get those cars assembled, for, let's say, in Indiana. So it's going to take a little bit longer to ramp the U.S. economy up just because the supply pipeline has to get restocked and then turned back on again.
Yeah, well, that's funny, isn't it? Because this is a man-made problem, so maybe we can resolve it, just turn the key back on. But it's a different car now, isn't it? I don't know if companies or plants are going to be able to supply the materials or the other parts for whatever it is you're making at the same speed with which they used to be able to provide them.
Yeah, so we know. So the thing that we do know and the thing that everyone should be careful of is the economic statistics for the next quarter are going to be horrible. You know, personal spending and, you know, retail inventories and durable goods demand are going to be horrible. Next week, we're going to have a terrible unemployment number. Stock market is looking past that because those statistics are backwards looking. So the supply chain will restock, inventories restock, businesses and manufacturing will restart. The rate of which will be governed by how long is their supply chain. The wild card that we haven't talked about in here is the geopolitics of the U.S. and China are having, to put it mildly, some disagreements about certainly the cause of the pandemic, who's culpable, and then certainly there's other problems between the U.S. and China trade. We are going to have a press conference here today at 1 o'clock from the White House. We suspect it's going to be about China. So that will also be a problem for markets because the number one and number two economies in the world, the U.S. and China, should be good trading partners. That has been on thin ice the past year, and then especially what's happened this spring has put a lot of friction between the U.S. and China. Certainly China's activities in the South China Sea in regards to Hong Kong and Taiwan aren't helping their world posture. So something that will take the air out of the stock market is if we get back to a full-on trade war again with China, the likes of which we saw last spring. So that would be bad for markets here, and we're going to hear about that hopefully in the next half hour and figure out what's going on there.
The president likes to remind us that if that's bad for markets, it might be good for local jobs. I think that's kind of his grand scheme. If your advice for the president was only to do what's best for the American economy, our 401ks and our paychecks, what would your advice to the president be with respect to China?
Well, with respect to the best thing, so as a pure abstraction, the best thing is free trade. There's no tariffs. There's no taxes. Everybody can trade with everybody and let the market sort it out, because that's what markets do. Markets are resource allocators. There are suppliers and there are people who have demand, and you figure out who's buying what from who based on price. That's all a market is a resource allocator. So the best advice to the president would be for free trade. We should have free trade with Canada and Mexico. I mean, there are two nearest neighbors and they're two of our biggest trading partners. This whole idea of tariffs and that should just be out the window if you want to do what's best for Americans. And then we should have a free trade zone with Europe. I mean, the UK, certainly, they're our oldest and nearest friend. We have a special relationship with the UK. That would be the best thing to do. Yeah. When you start talking about tariffs and trade and you start saying we're going to tariff cars or soybeans or steel or aluminum, it starts getting into political judgments and not economic judgments.
Well,
and
I think
distortions. Those are distortions that are not helpful.
Point taken, because it's not just the United States that does that. I think if you said, yeah,
right,
engage in that's a two-way street, and China doesn't play that way, said Mr. Trump, he was in my ear just a minute ago. I'm out of time, but this is a fascinating conversation. Let's visit again very soon, Brian. I appreciate your help.
We shall, John. You're welcome. Take care.
Brian Battle is the director at Performance Trust Capital Partners. Visit PerformanceTrust.com. 12:35 on WGN Radio. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Pete Zimmerman is our producer. I'm John Williams. John Murphy is on a phone line. Let's introduce the guest this way. Have you driven by the old historic Cook County Hospital? It's been vacant for a couple of decades. There's a lot of work actually going on there, and work that is to go on there. But think about this. Earlier this year, Block Club Chicago reported Cook County Hospital is months away from its next life as a hotel and office complex on the near west side. The restoration is part of a $1 billion multi-phase plan led by Murphy Development and Walsh Group to rehab the 106-year-old hospital and build apartments south of the rehabbed building. The building has had a cultural importance since its inception, often referred to as Chicago's Ellis Island. It was a safe haven where anyone was able to receive service and care at a time when one could not afford health care. We're talking about a building that is just magnificent to look at, but it's one of those buildings that could fall into great disrepair or be made into something terrific. This building goes back to 1857. And I'm just wondering if the current economic crisis is going to change all of that or what its status is. So let's talk a little bit about that with John Murphy from Murphy Development. He's the CEO over there. Hi, John. You're on WGN. How are you?
Good, John. Thanks for having me this afternoon.
Yeah. So how is that project going? Is it still going forward?
It's going forward. In fact, we're in our final few weeks of refinement until our opening of the hotel, and that's going to happen on July 1st of this year.
We're talking about the Hyatt property, right?
Yes, there's actually two hotels within the property, which will be one is a Hyatt House, which is an extended stay branded product for Hyatt, and the other is a Hyatt Place, which is more of a an affordable line for Hyatt, but I think it fits in well within the context of the IMD, serving the U of I, Rush, as well as Cook County Hospitals.
Are there other uses? Will that take up the entirety of the hospital then, or is that just part of that property?
No, not at all. Actually, also within the old building will be about 75,000 feet of medical office, which is going to be taken by the county. And then there's going to be about a 14,000-foot daycare center, a food hall, and then finally a museum, which pays tribute to not only Cook County, but the long history of the medical pursuits of Cook County.
Is this all a commercial enterprise? I mean, is this investors buying the property and then turning a profit when other people use it, or is it government funded?
No, this is what would be known as a public-private partnership. It's an extended ground lease, approximately 149-year ground lease with the county. And then it's private money that funded the development and financed the project.
Is this a good time to open a hotel, or is this a bad time to be opening a hotel?
Well, most would say it's not an optimal time to be opening a hotel. However, within the context of the medical district, it may be a much-needed amenity. You know, this is serving, patients and patient families who are going through acute care. And now with elective procedures commencing at Rush, U of I, as well as Cook County, we find that there is need for, hotel stays. And we're there to address those needs and requests.
And I suppose, sure, right? I mean, this isn't the perfect time this week, maybe this month, maybe even for the rest of this year, but you were planning on being there for more than a few months anyway, right?
That's for sure. We're long-term. We have a long-term perspective on the project as well as its future phases.
Are there other projects like this that you all have been involved with? That is this a sure thing when you sort of look at this model?
Well, we own a Holiday Inn on the campus of the Cleveland Clinic, and so we know this type of profile of hospitality asset and the demand drivers that it serves. And so we feel highly confident, given the dynamics of this location and the adjacencies, that we're going to be successful in the long term.
Yeah. So you're just involved in the Hyatt property then, the 210-suite transformation, right?
No, we own and control the entire project.
I see. Oh, no kidding. Not just the Hyatt, but you're also overseeing everything.
Yes, correct.
And how much of that square footage is accounted for? Are there still opportunities, or is it all sort of figured out?
No, at least this phase of the project is 100% accounted for. It has been for quite some time. And that's what I think, what we saw is the embedded demand within that location in that community that was somewhat underserved by hospitality office as well as multifamily and retail. And we're there to, address those needs, and I think the future phases, be it multifamily or commercial, will continue to address that going forward.
Now, I think about a project like this, or maybe the restoration of the old post office, and I think that must be maybe a headache, but also a dream project, right? There's just so much creative opportunity there.
Well, it's a tedious process, that's for sure. If you just look at, the renovation of the facade, it's a, Beaux-Art facade, which has, several thousand pieces on it, and our initial I would say diagnosis, if you will, was that we would have to replace or replicate approximately 1,400 pieces. But in reality, we've now done about 4,400, which was considerably more than we ever expected. But that, you know, that's kind of the nature of historic buildings that have been neglected or, you know, shut down for an extended period of time. And in this case, you know, the building had been shut down for more than 17 years.
I'm looking at some of the pictures on the inside and the outside, and some of them look sad, and then some of them look positively eye-popping, right? I guess it's a kind of before and after that I'm looking at here.
Yeah, the transformation is pretty dramatic. There's no doubt about it.
And one last thing. Is it difficult for you guys to find the tradespeople that can do all of this work? You talk about the facade, and I've wondered that. Who does that and does it well, you know?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Gladding McBean is one of really two contractors that really do the terracotta replication and restoration work. And they're located in out near Sacramento, California. But these are, you know, these are handcrafted pieces. They are, you know, takes meticulous detail to get them right. And so you have to dig pretty deep to find the right artisans and craftsmen to perform this type of renovation.
I want you guys to redo our bathroom.
Well, we might get around to it if things get awfully quiet in the future. But
it'd be a smaller project than you're used to. But
yeah. Well, we're going to have our hands full, I think, on this project for many years to come. And we're very excited about the future at this Harrison Square project.
I'll let you go, John. Is there an opening date? Is there a ribbon-cutting ceremony?
Yeah, there will be a ribbon-cutting ceremony sometime in August. But right now, the hotel opens on July 1st. And I think just from a grassroots perspective, we're encouraging everyone to come and take a look. It's a fantastic experience just recognizing the history of what this building has been and where it is today and where it's going in the future.
That building he's talking about is the historic Cook County Hospital and the Hyatt Project, among other things going on over there. Give us a shout-out when you guys are ready. We'll come over. I'm looking forward to it for you, John.
Sounds good. Look forward to seeing you.
How about that? John Murphy, CEO of Murphy Development. Visit MurphyRez.com. Let's visit Steve Bertrand. He's got a business minute.
Wind the clock. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, your daily roundup of Chicago area business news. Chicago law firm Jenner & Block will be in court defending itself. It's being sued for $3.8 million for back rent from this spring. The law firm says it has a right to hold back April and May payments. United CEO says there are no plans to file for bankruptcy. He told investors that's not even in their plans. Neither is buying any new jets other than the 20 or so they're already obligated to purchase. And Chicago healthcare company Higi brought in a new round of funding as it expands its health kiosks to more people around the U.S. They say 62 million people have already used them. Chicago Inno says Higi creates self-screening health stations that measures a person's blood pressure, pulse, weight, and things like that, all for free. I'm Steve Bertrand. That's the Wintrust Business Minute.
Back to you, Steve Bertrand.
Yeah, we've got mixed news on Wall Street. The Dow is down 251 points. The Nasdaq still eking out a gain, up 2.7, and the S&P 500 down 18.
And the Agribusiness Report with Orion Samuelson. Hey-o.
Hello there. Corn and soybean futures trading lower today. And the main reason, the U.S.-China trade tensions over Beijing's proposed restrictions on Hong Kong, that put a damper on the markets after a week of positive movement. President Trump expected to address the China-U.S. situation later today. But three sources said China may reduce its imports of U.S. agricultural products if Washington issues a severe response to Beijing's push to impose national security laws on Hong Kong. One analyst trader said, "It's been a headline trading day with uncertainty over U.S.-China relations." However, wheat did move higher. Traders assessing weather outlooks for warm, dry weather in the U.S. plains and could be reduced harvest estimates in Europe following a dry spring over there. The most active corn futures contract at the Board of Trade down 4 cents a bushel. And we're trying to keep up with cancellations and changes because of the COVID-19 schedule. We do know the Wisconsin State Fair for this year has been canceled at West Allis. And the latest word we got from Indiana just a few minutes ago, the Indiana State Fair will move forward as previously announced and does not have an update. That, according to Sharon Smith, who is communications director for the Indiana State Fairgrounds and Events Center. So the Indiana State Fair is still scheduled from August 7 through 23. Illinois State Fair still checking. And some other activities have been canceled or are checking. Harvard Milk Days, the celebration of the dairy industry in McHenry County, has been postponed to October. They would normally hold their three-day celebration of the dairy industry in McHenry County on the first weekend of June Dairy Month, but that won't happen this year. And my best advice to 4-H members, FFA members, county fairgoers, and enthusiasts, keep checking with your local situation, because the county fairs will be making that decision on their own on whether or not they will hold a county fair this year. So we'll be checking again tomorrow morning on the Saturday morning show, and if we can get more information from any of the fairs, we'll have that for you. In the meantime, a good weekend for gardening, and Jim Fazell will be on the air with us, as he is every Saturday morning during gardening season, to talk about what you can do and what you should do for the garden at this time of the year. So that's your money on 720 WGN.
1251 WGN Radio News at 1 o'clock. Steve Bertrand will have that. It's interesting to note, this is a random observation, but when you go to CNN and you watch them on TV, they've always had on the right-hand side of the screen the mortality counts internationally and in the United States with COVID-19. That's not there today. At least it's not there right now. The focus is all on what's happening in Minneapolis. And Steve Bertrand's got more news about all of that coming up at 1 o'clock. That's 9 minutes out. Luke Cairo is our next guest from GWC Injury Lawyers. This is Chicago's largest personal injury law firm. And the question for you today, Lou, is when businesses open back up, how liable are they going to be if some of their customers or employees get sick? How are you, Lou?
I'm good. How you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks. Start with that one, Lou. What's going to happen? Is there sort of precedent for this sort of thing?
Well, I can't say there's precedent because there's never been a COVID-19 virus known to mankind, but we've certainly had situations in the past where the floodgates of litigation have opened up because of some type of an occurrence, but nothing to my knowledge like what we're going to see in this situation, because obviously everybody that, in my opinion, everyone who's smart is very concerned about the virus, and they're concerned about getting back into the public, and they're concerned about getting in elevators and buildings, and they're concerned about getting sick. So when bad things happen to people, they usually talk to lawyers, and then the lawyers will find ways to file lawsuits. And unfortunately, there will be some meritorious lawsuits, and there will be some types of lawsuits that maybe are not so meritorious, and things that really shouldn't be filed. Like certain, as an example, the governor passed an executive order in the middle of March saying that if you're going to file a lawsuit against a paramedic or a nurse or a doctor or a hospital or a nursing home because somebody contracted COVID-19, you can't do it for simple, ordinary negligence. They have to be responsible to a level of gross negligence, willful and wanton recklessness.
How do you determine that?
Well, it's a fact question, and the difference is negligence is, as an example, I'm driving in my car, and I reached down to turn the dial on the radio, and I looked up, and I went through the intersection. That's being negligent versus I was drinking, and I dropped my beer, and I was drunk, and I was feeling around the floor for my beer, and I just wasn't looking, and I went through the intersection. But driving drunk is reckless and willful misconduct. Taking your eye off the ball, so to speak, and you're sober is just negligence. And in a medical situation, there's situations in certain nursing homes, as an example, where we have clients at a nursing home in Joliet who are both families of decedents and CNAs working there, and we know for a fact that CNAs have told us in statements that if we tested positive but did not have symptoms, we were told we had to go back to work, and we continued working. And meanwhile, we were reusing our own non-N95 masks, just regular cloth masks. We were reusing them. We weren't getting new masks, and we were told that was sufficient. And guess what? Dozens and dozens of people died in these nursing homes, and that's willful and wanton, in my opinion. That's not ordinary negligence. We did everything possible. We followed the CDC instructions, but I mean, this stuff is in the air. We can't stop people from walking into the building, and that would be ordinary negligence. So there are some ways to try to get around some of these lawsuits, but innovative and creative lawyers will figure out what try to maximize the results for their clients.
Well, sure, I'm not. Lawyers aren't the problem, right? And if you feel like you've got a claim, you should exercise every opportunity you have to, exercise your rights. In the case of employees that are being asked to work in an unhealthy situation, and who's not a champion of their cause? What about the McDonald's? Well, if I may, though.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, John.
Well, you're the guest. Go ahead and finish that thought.
Well, here's what I was going to say. Everybody wants the economy to reopen. I mean, my God, you can't turn the television on or the radio without hearing these protesters. And, if I feel bad for some of these people. I haven't worked for 2 months. I'm losing my house. I'm losing my car. I'm losing my business. My restaurant was a thriving environment. I'm down $300,000 in 2 months. I think I'm going to go bankrupt. I feel terrible for those people. So we are going to be allowed to open up and get back into the workplace. And these companies are going to be able to go back to hopefully making money. But at what expense? I mean, don't lose sight that the little guy, the construction workers that are on these scaffolds and going in and out of elevators up and down to do tenant build-outs, or the people working in grocery stores, or the people working in accounting firms, or my law firm, when you've got, almost 100 people getting in and out of elevators all day walking around the law firm, at what expense does that create an obstacle to the incentive to opening up businesses so capitalist manufacturing companies, insurance industries, and lawyers and doctors can make money? You got to try to find that balance. And the law has not heretofore protected the little guy under these circumstances. So the businessman says, go to work, do what you got to do, get in there, don't worry about it, wear a face mask, you're not going to get sick. And if you do get sick, call public aid, call your insurance company, or go on your spouse's insurance, but don't sue us. We don't want that to be a workers' comp claim. Now, the governor headed that up on March 20th. He passed an executive order saying that if you are working in a work environment, you're exposed to the public and you're exposed to COVID-19, there's a rebuttable presumption that you caught it on the job. That got fought. A lawsuit was filed in Springfield. A judge entered a TRO to restrain the enforcement of that order at the Industrial Commission, and the Industrial Commission just threw it out. They said, we don't want to deal with this with this lawsuit. Mm-hmm. Well, then somebody put a bill on the floor. The Senate voted in favor of it 50-4, and the House voted in favor of it 113-2 to pass a new legislation that says basically what Pritzker put in his executive order. This is a bill to protect people more so than protecting profits of their employers.
Got it.
And the rule says if you're an essential worker, you're a doctor, you're a paramedic, you're a nurse, you're a police officer, firefighter, or you're one of the identified essential workers, which are strong construction working people in Illinois, grocery workers, warehousers, things of that nature. If you are working in healthcare or a first responder, and you get COVID-19, it's presumed that it happened on the job. It's a rebuttable presumption.
And I think there's two sides to this story. This is a conversation you and I will have with that other side another day. I'm always interested in your take on these things, Lou. I'm out of time today, though.
No problem.
Lou Cairo is with GWCLaw.com. Thanks for your time, Lou. My best to you all.
My pleasure. Be safe, my friend.
Same to you.